You are listening to WDOT Port Washington. Hello, and welcome back to the Epic Entertainment Roundup. Today we have an extra special interview with Sam Dillon, an accomplished saxophonist. Over his time in the music industry, he has toured with such music groups as the Vanguard Orchestra, the Jimmy Heath Big Band, Mingus Big Band, Slide Ham Dinger Octet, the 8-Bit Big Band, the Birdland Big Band, and many others. He is also a Grammy winner for his participation in the 8-Bit Big Band's Meta Knight's Revenge from Kirby Superstar. Please give a huge welcome to a mentor of mine, Sam Dillon. How are you doing today?
Hey, Gabe, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on the show. And that's quite an introduction you gave me. Thank you.
Of course. So let's start from the beginning. What age did you start playing saxophone at?
I was around 9 or 10. It was fourth grade, and that's, you know, when the elementary schools typically start you off on an instrument. And I think the first choice I had was trumpet, but everyone had already grabbed those, so they put me on saxophone. And I never gave it up.
When did you get really into music?
I think right off the bat, you know, I just kind of gravitated towards more of the, I guess, the social element of music and collaborating with people. And a bunch of my friends were into it, you know, for various reasons. I think they might have been more concerned with making sure that their credits look good for applying to college and stuff like that. But either way, we immediately started kind of goofing around and forming bands and playing together right off the bat. So for whatever reason, my group of friends was into music, and you know, I just kind of loved the social element of it, I think, almost even more in a way than music itself. So it was a good time then.
Did you play throughout your whole school career?
I did, yeah. As soon as I started in the fourth grade, which was on actually alto for a year, and I switched to tenor, I liked the darker sound. I think I heard like the theme from Pink Panther or something, and I wanted to figure out how to sound that way, so I went to tenor. And that was fifth grade, and I just continued to play all through, you know, all through high school and until I, you know, went to school for music in college.
Which school did you go to for music?
Well, actually, originally, I went to University of Miami, which was an amazing program. And I was there for 2 years. I learned so much, but ultimately I wanted to come back to New York because I'm a native New Yorker, and I was really missing kind of the New York energy and you know, everything that was going on in New York, all the music that you could see. And also being away from home at that age, you know, 2 years seemed like it was enough time. I wanted to come back to New York, and I transferred to SUNY Purchase, which was equally as good of a program in a little bit of a different way. I stayed there and finished my undergrad there in 3 years and continued with my master's there, as a matter of fact, for another two. And then I was freelancing for about 7-8 years and until I got into my the artist diploma program at Juilliard, which was my, I guess, technically my third degree in music. That's called an artist diploma. And I was still freelancing while I was doing that. So that's basically my full educational resume right there. So University of Miami for 2 years, finished my undergrad at SUNY Purchase and master's at SUNY Purchase, and then got an artist diploma from Juilliard.
Mm-hmm. So did you ever join like the marching band or do like a concert band while during your time at college or throughout your school career, or were you always set on jazz?
I was pretty much into jazz from the beginning, but I did do a lot of classical repertoire in high school at Great Neck North, where Joe Rutkowski was directing, because, you know, he's a great classical clarinetist. And he also has some jazz influence in his playing. His father played accordion and he would run the jazz program too. So I had experience playing classical repertoire on clarinet and some classical saxophone even in that high school program. But most of the time, it was predominantly jazz influence and kind of moving in that direction, in addition to playing, you know, flute and clarinet, which I was lucky enough to start on at a young age. But actually, to answer your question, I actually directed the marching band for 1 year, I think, in high school.
Oh, wow.
I was like, I did that for the football team, but I was also an athlete, which was kind of funny. So I think a lot of my buddies that were playing football at the time were making fun of me for being in the marching band, but I didn't care. I had a good time. A lot of my friends were in the marching band too. And so, I think I did that for 1 year and then decided not to continue doing the marching band. Cause that's also kind of not as much about the music in a certain way and more about, you know, just being kind of, part of the football team, and there's a whole bunch of different things that involves that I didn't necessarily want to be involving myself in too much, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any mentors growing up?
Well, yes, I did. I had the I guess the first one and the most significant person who made an impact on me was a gentleman named Charles DeAngelis. He's known on Long Island as Chasey Dean. And he was my first saxophone teacher, and he was this old guy who had been around a lot of the, you know, real heavyweight icons and jazz legends that we talk about back in the day. He even went to Juilliard himself back when people like Phil Woods were going there, and he was fairly close friends with Phil Woods too, but he was also a very serious classically trained clarinet player, and he would come over to my parents' house, you know, our home, and I would have these kind of like extra long hour and a half lessons, and my mom would cook like a pasta dinner, and he would hang out and tell me all these stories, and that kind of morphed into him forming a band, actually, with my father, who was kind of like a semi-professional drummer. He actually made an attempt to become a professional drummer for a year. He went to Berkeley in 71 or 2, I believe, and studied with Alan Dawson before he became an architect. So it kind of sparked or re-sparked his desire to be playing drums. Although he had also been playing drums, you know, on the side with some kind of like rock bands himself while I was growing up. And anyway, they formed this band, and I was kind of like around listening to them play jazz standards and stuff. And that really got me going as far as my confidence in playing with other people goes, and interest in playing music, and you know, the joy and love of doing something like that. So you know, I really came up in a really warm and kind of encouraging musical family situation, and I'm really grateful for that. And Chasey was the first guy that I was around that kind of gave me that kind of old school wisdom. You know, he was there in the club, I think, when Miles Davis said, "I'd like to introduce you all to a new tenor player in town. His name is John Coltrane." And apparently, oh, wow. Coltrane stood up and was kind of, you know, his normal humble self and didn't want to play. And Sonny Stitt happened to be there and said, "Here, play my horn." You know, Sonny Stitt being the competitive guy he was. So, and Chasey was there. Chasey was at this club hanging out, and he told me that story. So to be kind of around someone like that from the beginning, I think, was super, super informative and meaningful, even before I realized how significant and cool of a guy he was, you know.
Mm-hmm. And for my listeners out there that don't know, Sam Dillon actually placed into the Thelonious Monk International Jazz Saxophone Competition. I'm not sure if it's the same name now. I believe they might have changed it. For my listeners out there who don't know about the event, could you, one, please explain what it is, and two, did you ever look back upon all of the people that helped you in your career getting to that moment?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's a multi-part question, and I'm happy to answer everything. So, first thing is that, yes, I think it's changed to the Herbie Hancock Institute now. And yeah, that was in many ways a significant point in my career, but also at the same time, not so important. You know, I'm not the biggest believer in formalized competition in that way. You know, our career that we engage in, you know, enter is very competitive. It's a difficult career. So there's a level of competition that I do enjoy. But when it's put together in this kind of like ranking system, in that way, you know, I think everyone kind of has mixed feelings about it. On one hand, it's incredible to be honored like that. And it's an incredible way of creating a reason for all of these musicians and people that are in the music business and up and coming talent to all come together and kind of be in some kind of place all together. So as far as I see it, it was almost more of like a young person's saxophone festival more than a competition, actually. And yes, being there was incredibly humbling and a huge honor, and also really exciting. I got to sit with Wayne Shorter in the lobby of the hotel up in Washington, D.C. We were at for a minute and just sit next to him and have some, you know, have a few, you know, exchanges with him. And just to be around all of the other players who were semifinalists, you know, everyone was sounding great, and everyone has gone on to really do really amazing things with their music career too. So it was just overall a great experience, and you know, I definitely have pretty much everyone that was involved in my music education to thank leading up to that point. You know, I came from some really great music programs. I was actually a student at USDAN, where I first met Jimmy Heath. And that's where I'm teaching now. I'm teaching jazz program at USDAN. And that was an incredible experience. And the teacher there was this tenor player named Pavo Carey, and he made a huge impact on me. I was also involved in Nassau Suffolk for many years, I think 6 years actually, which was an incredible program on Long Island. And at that time, that was run by, you know, the guy who's associated with music education on Long Island, really. His name is Bill Katz, and he recently passed away. He left an indelible mark on music education on Long Island. And the junior band was also run by a great educator named Jim Dragovich, and I was in his band for 2 years as well. And I've been able to recently reconnect with him because he came to one of my gigs, actually. So it was like a full circle experience. And, you know, a whole bunch of other people who kind of have been guides and teachers of mine that led to that moment. You know, the expression "no man is an island" is definitely maybe even more true in the music business. So you're absolutely right for asking about that. And there's hundreds of people that I've even left out, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
So I actually attended USDAN this summer, and I spent, I believe it was 4 weeks with Sam Dillon, learning about jazz, the history of jazz, how to play jazz better. And I remember one day you were telling me and the rest of the class about how hard you practiced in college. How did that experience in college, you know, practicing for all those hours, help you in the long run of your professional music career?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, practicing is an interesting subject, I think, because everyone says you got to practice, you know. And there's a huge part of doing that that you have to go through. But I don't know if stressing the reason for practicing is spoken about enough. You know, the reason for practicing is so you can get to the point of allowing yourself to be in the moment. And, you know, being in the moment is also a fairly obtuse subject. What does that mean? Well, you want to be able to give yourself a skill set and a way of developing and playing so that when you arrive in certain situations and musical situations, you're able to interact with the other musicians around you. You're able to respond to things. You're able to shape the music in real time. And the only way that you're able to do that is if you have a whole bunch of skills in your back pocket. And that's really the reason why you practice. I think often people get bogged down with practicing and then almost not, and almost saying themselves, well, now what? What do I do? And that's kind of almost the opposite mentality that you need to have if you're going to try to be developing yourself into a good improviser, especially in jazz, because the practicing is there to serve your imagination, your intuition, your creativity. The practice is not there to be worked on as a means to prove what you've done. You know, so when teachers say, you know, you've got to practice this, it's because they want you to be able to show up and work, you know, be able to work on the music in the classroom. You know, that's why I was telling you all that, you know, you need to practice this, because when it's time to come into the classroom, we don't want to worry about whether someone is playing a wrong note or not, or we don't want to worry about whether someone is in tune or not. We want to worry about how the music, the art of performing is actually going to come across. We want to talk about dynamics. We want to talk about time. We want to talk about phrasing. You know, we want to talk about the delivery of the music itself. And you can't really get to those things as well if you haven't done the work at home, you know? Mm. And that is an important thing for musicians to really consider, because it can make practicing exciting. You know, you can look at it as, wow, I'm really doing this to get ready and put myself in the best position I can be in to make music, which is when the time comes, I'm going to be ready to go. And that can make practicing exciting. If you look at practicing as this kind of laborious, tired thing, and there's no point to it, then you're going to actually feel that way when you're practicing, and you're probably not going to get as much done, you know. And an anecdote, you know, I like to share from one of my biggest influences and many other people's influence, Michael Brecker, the great tenor saxophone, tenor saxophonist and musician, really, is that he said that he only practiced things that he thought was going to be musically useful for him. You know, he didn't really practice things just for technique's sake. And it's a really interesting thing that he was sharing in an interview, because he was basically saying a similar thing that I'm saying, which is that you're working on something in a preparation for being in the moment, in preparing yourself to be able to emote and better serve the music when the performance time comes, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's an important dichotomy to consider, for sure.
And the work you've put in over the years has brought you to some amazing places, such as the Mingus Band and the Birdland Big Band. How did you actually get involved with those two bands, and any really band that you've really been in over the years? How do you get involved with being in such a large group?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I think just like any other business and any other field that you might want to enter, it does come down to who you know and how long you've been around. You know, I think that a lot of younger people will often ask me for career advice and ask me how I got into certain situations. And of course, working hard on music, practicing, taking it incredibly seriously, you know, making sure you're doing your homework with different musical styles, and being positive to your colleagues and the people around you, and trying to play with them as much as possible, and being encouraging to other people, and also, you know, believing in the direction you're going in. You know, all of those things are incredibly important because they translate to you being someone that someone is going to want to hire. You know, the positive thing is also something that has really helped me. I can't stress that enough to young people. You, especially in the quote unquote jazz field, you have to believe in yourself. You have to be doing something that you want to be doing. And if you are and you believe in it, that's going to translate into a incredibly powerful and positive message that you're kind of just subconsciously omitting to the people around you. And people are going to want to hire you. But the bigger point that I was going to make is that the Mingus Band and Birdland both kind of, in a way, landed in my lap just from the fact that I was doing other things in New York, and I was playing a lot and being called for other gigs and doing all sorts of different performance things and keeping myself busy the entire time. You know, I didn't just get asked to be in the Mingus Big Band. This had happened after, you know, many years of playing in small groups in my own band, in a whole bunch of different other big bands, graduating from, you know, the artist diploma program at Juilliard, playing in the Stephen Feifke Big Band. You know, there's so many more groups that I was involved in, and, you know, even kind of putting my name on a higher profile from the Thelonious Monk competition. So all of these things kind of start to add up and snowball. And it's not like all of a sudden I was asked to be in the Mingus Big Band and then my career was all of a sudden made, which is, I think, something that young people tend to think is going to happen. Like, you're going to get your one big break and it happens. And that's actually the exact opposite of how things go. And I'm still living by that example because I have all this stuff going on these days, and there's not one thing that I'm relying on to make my career continue. I'm constantly working on different parts of my playing, trying to improve different parts of my skill set, especially now my doubling, my writing. Trying to work on music for an upcoming recording project, actually two upcoming recording projects. So when people ask about how did I get in these situations, it's really from trying to do as much as I can and be on the scene around, trying to meet musicians, play with other musicians, form bands, and try to find a playing opportunity. And I was just thinking while I was walking back home to do this interview with you that there was a gig I used to do in Midtown at this restaurant, which isn't there anymore, Cafe Cialo. And we would play for tips, and they would feed us dinner. And I was playing with this gentleman, Paris Wright, who actually used to babysit Art Blakey's children. Oh, and wow. He has this incredible swing beat, and he didn't really know any of the forms of the songs, though. He would do these kind of press rolls into the fifth measure and mess the whole band up. So it was kind of like a relaxed gig, but I would do this every week, and this was maybe 15, 20 years ago, and for tips, maybe $50. But those are the kind of things that I would do to learn how to play with people, you know, and learn repertoire and try to make myself busy, because I was so into just kind of going out and playing and trying to form an identity with my sound. And that can only really happen when you're putting yourself in playing situations. You can do all the practicing you want, and you can do all the analysis of great solos that you want at home. But until you pick up your instrument and you're actually doing the thing with other people, you don't really have the tools you need to really carry you through to the next level. So that's an important phase that I think anyone from, 15 to 25, et cetera, needs to go through, Yeah. And it really is about refining your voice and your craft. And those are the kind of things that led up to getting asked to play in, some of the incredible bands that I'm still honored to be asked to play in today.
And I'm sure a highlight in your career was receiving a Grammy for the 8-Bit Big Band. How did it feel to receive that award?
Oh, well, to be honest with you, that being in that band is almost, it's not as much of a personal award for me as much of it is, as it is a matter of feeling a certain level of pride to be part of that. It's almost like an organization, because the true genius is Charlie Rosen for organizing this band and arranging these charts and doing all the work that he's done. So he's really the Grammy winner. As far as I'm concerned, I'm just lucky to have been in New York and around and playing in all these different big bands where I felt like, I'm maybe one of the first people that's considered when someone's putting a big band together, or at least I hope that's the case. And Charlie called me for this, and it just stuck. And, for that reason, I'm very grateful. But it's really more of a feeling of being part of this incredible group than a personal Grammy Award for me, maybe at some point that'll come. And I don't necessarily put too much weight on that. Although from a business side of things, it's definitely nice to be able to put Grammy Award winning saxophonist so-and-so in some kind of blurb somewhere. But it's not really as much about that in this situation. This is more of like a family of all these incredible musicians. And Charlie really does call the best of the best in New York. That's also part of his genius. He put together probably 200 musicians in New York to make all of this happen, with all the strings and all the different vocalists and all the different horn players that he's had. And it's really incredible what he's done. So he's really the Grammy winner in this situation. And I'll let my little plaque hang on the wall. That's cool. That's kind of how I feel about all that.
And you've been playing in New York for so long. Obviously, a big industry in New York is Broadway. And I personally am an actor. I love all musical theater, all music from Broadway. I was just wondering, have you ever played in a Broadway pit before?
Yes, I have. And I did a few things. Technically, they are Broadway shows at 54 Below.
Ah, yes.
So I've done a variety of different things at that place, and there have been a few other shows. I'm not remembering over right now, but I have done some of that. Not maybe as much as other people, because I've kind of stayed on the jazz, quote unquote jazz side of things. But I have done some of that. Yeah.
And most recently, I heard that a mouthpiece is being created with your name. How does it feel to have such an honor like that?
Oh, man. Well, whether or not my name is on it is not, the most important thing to me. What I'm really grateful for is my relationship with Stefan Kammerer, who you're mentioning right now, because he's taken the time to sit down with me and really get nitpicky with all of the different aspects of a mouthpiece. So it's been a learning experience for me. And we've been working on this for about 4 years. So it's actually nothing new. And that has just been eye-opening, really, in terms of how you can create a good sound on the saxophone. So, you know, I'm looking forward to what we end up putting out there. And I think there is a chance that my name will be on it, but I don't think it's going to be called anything like the Sam Dillon, blah, blah, blah. It might have its own name, and then it'll just be something that me and Stefan did. Although he's saying he thinks my name should be on it. So I don't know. We'll debate that in another time and figure it out. But right now we're still going through, different stages of making these prototypes, and I'm actually supposed to see him this Monday again for another update on what he's working on. We'll see where that goes.
And just to finish off the interview, do you have any advice for someone that would want to become a musician or go into the musical industry in jazz or in general?
Yeah, my biggest thing is to make sure that you're doing what you love, and that you work really, really hard at turning yourself into, you know, the best player that you possibly can be. And also go into it realizing that things aren't always easy, and that there is going to be difficulty that comes your way. But if you do work hard, and if you do, you know, stay true to yourself, and you do form relationships with people that really value who you are, and you value who they are, you're going to be able to do fine. You know, you can be successful. You just got to keep a good head on your shoulders, you know.
Well, Sam, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, Gabe, thank you so much for having me. It's a, you know, it's a pleasure getting to talk with you, and my hope is that this interview will help some young people, and anyone that might have any questions for me should feel free to contact you or contact me, and I'll be happy to talk to anyone at any point.
Well, thank you so much. And as always, this has been your host of the Epic Entertainment Roundup, Gabriel, saying keep it jazzy.